Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. The prestigious Peabody Awards were announced yesterday, honoring achievement in compelling and empowering storytelling. Among the winners were WNYC's own podcast, Dolly Parton's America, in the audio category. In the nonfiction group, the documentary about a family trying to survive in Syria for Sama was recognized, as well as civil rights attorney Bryan Stevenson's HBO series True Justice. On the entertainment side, winners included the Hulu show Rami, about a comedy about a modern young Muslim man, as well as the Netflix miniseries Unbelievable, about a rape victim who was not believed until two female officers took over the case. Now, the creators of all those shows, all those winners, have been guests on All of It. So you might want to check out those interviews on our site and, of course, their work. Another one of the programs recognized was Succession. If you haven't watched the series, here's a recap. The family drama slash comedy centers around the uber-rich clan of an aging but fierce patriarch, Logan Roy, the head of a media conglomerate that makes big money off conservative news and theme parks. His privileged, power-hungry kids include a drug-addled suck-up, a spoiled Peter Pan truth-teller, and a deluded political candidate, and a daughter who is one shady lady with a killer wardrobe. And that's just the family. There's a whole company full of winners. The legal counsel of the media company is a woman named Jerry, played by J. Smith Cameron. Jerry emerged in the second season as a power player and garnered a huge fan following online. Elle magazine wrote last fall, Twitter has decided that Jerry is officially the best character on Succession. Operating mostly in the shadows of the Roy's already murky dealings, Jerry is a cool-headed fixer who comes off as the smartest and most in control of them all. When I spoke with J. Smith Cameron about the series last fall, I began our conversation by asking about how she came to take on the role of Jerry, which was originally written for a male actor.
When I went to audition, Doug Abel and his office explained to me that they had gotten this idea that maybe they should audition some women for the part, and I don't think they decided yet whether or not to do that. And so I read, and looking back, now that I know how those scripts turned out, some of the scenes I read turned out to be Frank's material, uh-huh. And some turned out to be Jerry's, and Jerry was written J-E-R-R-Y, like, you know, as for a man. And I think it was actually a really great decision. I don't know that it had anything to do with me, actually, but to make Jerry a woman, because there are a lot of female general counsels of big companies, and it's a great opportunity to see, you know, a strong, funny, clever...
Together. Lady.
Yes, powerful woman.
How would you describe her relationship with the Roy family that is kind of... Murdoch-y, we'll say,
right.
For people who need some reference.
Well, I imagine that Jerry has been sort of a lifer in that company. I mentioned my first scene I ever shot, I mentioned my husband, who was a godfather as well. Jerry's a godmother to at least some of the Roy children. And I sort of imagined that he had worked for the organization as well. Maybe I was his successor, I don't know. In my post, it's just mm-hmm. what I imagined. So I think, you know, I've been working for them for decades, and I think that my character is wary of them, but also completely over it, like really is never fazed, is unflappable in the face of their shenanigans. And when I say unflappable, I think that doesn't preclude some eye rolling and some, you know, some you know, needing to take some martini breaks now and then.
That you have described the family at the center of this show as, quote, almost the Oxford Dictionary definition of patriarchy. So how do you feel that Jerry changes, or what's her effect on that sort of alchemy of that family?
Well, that remains to be seen in a way, right? Mm-hmm. I think I said that about the patriarchy because he's literally a father, and that a lot of what goes on in that story has to do with literally an abused family, a dysfunctional family,
yeah.
Dealing with a father whose respect and attention they desperately crave, and they're living in this odd sort of bubble. They're a bunch of spoiled brats who are kind of don't know how to experience the world, and they thrive. Their oxygen is his attention, and it runs hot and cold, and they don't know what to expect ever. So it's literally at his beck and call. So I don't know, because I think the whole idea of the show, the premise of the show is at some point, succession is inevitable for all of us, mm-hmm. and for even Logan Roy. So I think that that's the whole gripping story is, how will that unfold, and who will be able to handle the reins when it is passed down, and if it's passed down, or whether it's taken, or whether it's, you know,
manipulated.
Exactly. That remains to be seen.
Why does Jerry stay with these awful people? She's so smart.
Again, an excellent question. I don't know. I mean, I feel like my answer for that is, you know, comes back to why I love being on the show, that it's adrenaline-fueled, thrilling, cutting-edge, that I think Jerry is a workaholic and loves the all-nighters. I don't know. I think it's like an extreme sport to work mm-hmm. for the Roys. And she's kind of addicted. And I think it probably is a very addictive atmosphere. It's hard to imagine because just the way that people like to watch it. I mean, I think it's that same thing. I like to work on that show. People like to watch the show. And I think that's probably somehow relates to why Jerry likes to work there, even though it's hazardous to oneself.
In season one, there's this very telling part of the script when we're sort of first meeting Jerry, and they're trying to decide, the kids are trying to decide whether she's an ally or not.
Right.
And Shiv, the daughter, says, I love that her name is Shiv.
Yeah, Siobhan. It's short for Siobhan.
Siobhan, but like, also why Shiv is a
conveniently,
knife.
I know, conveniently also means.
So she says, I don't like Jerry, but yeah. I don't hate Jerry.
Right.
That Jerry lives in this world with these kids, because she's got to have a relationship with the company, but she also has to deal with these children.
Yeah.
How does she view the children? As you said, she's a godmother to Roman, maybe? I think it is?
Who doesn't remember? I'm a godmother to Shiv, but then it seems like no one knows. In the story, actually, no one remembers and knows. So there's a kind of a vague, there's a lot of being called fairy godmother there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, every time we bring it up, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I think she's a
I think she's their godmother.
She might be a godmother. So I'm sorry, what was the question?
The question was, what is her relationship to these kids? That is like sort of a high compliment from Shiv. I don't like her, but I don't hate her.
Right.
That's about the nicest thing.
Well, I feel like Shiv and I have sort of equivalent takes on each other, that we are respectful of each mm-hmm. other and a little untrusting. As for the boys, I feel like Jerry knew them when they were little, thinks they're sort of, you know, feckless, you know, amusing, and can't be left alone, must mm-hmm. be supervised at all times. And I think what happens in this season, without making too much of a spoiler of it, is that believe that Roman and Jerry are, well, they definitely have a subplot.
Oh, we're going there. In a
we're
minute.
Going there. Okay. But I think that there's an authentic rapport building between them that starts at the beginning of season one, actually. I think from that moment that you just cited, where they are looking for someone to take CEO, and he's in the hospital, Logan is in the hospital, and they might even that night need to name someone, and they're going around kind of hysterically trying to figure out what to do, what to announce to the stockholders.
And they send Roman.
And so, yeah, and they send Roman. And I think even from that scene, there's almost a little whiff of a kind of camaraderie or some badinage, some, you know, humorous. I think they just have a rapport, and that begins to really grow. And their needs are, they have some shared, there's some mutual beneficial results to having an alliance there, I think, that it's slowly dawning as the series unfolds.
I was sharing with you, I went back and I watched the first couple last night, and after season two, you go back and watch the first couple, you see the seeds being planted.
That show is crazy that way, because mm-hmm. I experienced that before we ever shot this season. I looked back when we were getting ready to go back to shoot season two. I went back to watch, and I was like, gosh, there's all these, like, I guess you say Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. Like, there's all these little things that later are, you know, really colored in and filled out. And And it's just amazing how they did not, the writers and producers and directors did not seem to, and the editors did not seem to feel they needed to tip their hand, but they were tracking all these layers. It's just, I think, why the show is so rich to watch. It's so satisfying for that reason.
My guest is Jay Smith Cameron. We're talking about her role as Jerry on Succession. So this is what we telegraphed about Ewan Roman, who's played by Kieran Culkin, who is hilarious.
I think so, too.
He's really funny. So you guys have evolved into, I typed all different ways to describe this relationship that has evolved between you. So I'm going to call it a sort of a psychosexual friendship.
I like that.
Has kind of come in, into place.
Cause I'm going to use that.
Jerry is a widow. She's about 20 years his senior. And he, you guys have these conversations where he gets sexually excited when you sort of dominate him and degrade him verbally. You go, at one point, you revolting little worm, aren't you? You little slime puppy. And he just loves this.
Yes.
Did you know you were going down this road? When did the writers tell you?
Well, at the beginning of season two, we were shooting our first day on set together. We were shooting the scenes where Roman and Jerry are in Japan doing some damage control from the satellite accident that happened, that he sets off a satellite. That's end of season one. And so season two starts, their story starts in Japan. And they're trying to do some press events and clean up that. And we watch Kendall doing his statement on an iPad. And Mark Mylod, our director, was like, Jerry.
Kendall's the eldest son.
Kendall's the eldest son. And Roman's his younger son, younger brother. And Mark was like, Jay, just cozy up a little bit to Kieran there. Just a little foreshadowing. I was like, huh? So we did the scene. I got a little closer to look at the iPad. And then later I was like, excuse me, what exactly, what do you mean foreshadowing? And I was like, oh my God, has no one told you? And then they had kind of roughed out this idea that, Roman discovers this kink he has in his nature, that he responds to Jerry that way. And they had thought at that point as far as episode 5, which is when he visits my bedroom at Cherry Jones's family's house in Long Island. And they had thought that far, and they weren't really sure. I wasn't sure whether they would actually include that subplot, whether they shot it or not. Like, I feel like they shoot a lot of material, and we improv a lot on set, and you're never quite sure how or in what way that stuff will show up. So I think Jerry is extremely canny. She's careful. She is the cat who lands on her feet all the time. So I don't think she would be rash or impulsive, whereas, Roman seems very impulsive. He seems to have an impulse control problem, actually.
My guest is actor Jay Smith Cameron. I'm just curious your thoughts on why she's really broken out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women's magazines are writing about her. There's something about her in this moment that is just sort of perfect. What do you think it is?
Gee, that's nice to hear. Well, I think that she's putting her gender and age aside, which I think are big factors of why she's popular, but putting that aside for a moment, I think just the idea of someone who's very integrated into both the family and the office politics of that story, that she is able to be amongst the Roys but not really of the Roys, and that gives the audience a kind of sanity check person to relate to.
Yeah.
And that it's kind of fun, I think, to see her. I'm imagining that it's fun for people to see someone roll their eyes and bite their lip 1,000 times all day and just cope with them. And she's sort of bemused. And I think there's some sort of relief for the audience in that. And then, I think it's undeniable. It seems undeniable to me that it's timely somehow to see that people are ready to see middle-aged female characters portrayed in a dimensional way, not in a generic way, not in a cliche-ridden way, but in this very specific way. And it's not just my character. It's Marsha and Nan Pierce, Cherry Jones's character, and certainly Holly Hunter's character, Rhea. There's more, I think. Jeannie Berlin, fantastic in the show. And I think that's just a very clever, astute, well-observed thing on the writer staff's part of picking up on this shift in our culture, or a mini shift, or a hopefully one that's, you know, a predictor of what's ahead, which is to take this whole body of people in the workforce and in culture more seriously.
I want to ask you about the wardrobe.
Okay.
What does it take to get into character with Jerry, and how would you describe her wardrobe? Do you like her wardrobe? Does it help you sort of become her?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I don't, as you can see, I don't dress like Jerry in real life. She definitely has a corporate look, although in season two, we get to see Jerry in other circumstances, traveling and at events more than we did in season one. But definitely, I don't wear suits usually. I don't even own a suit, I don't think. So it's really incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. And also, there's a sort of a big part of these characters that, you know, part of their whole experience is that their feet hurt all day. They're in heels and in suits all day long. And so there's a little thing in either the last episode, or was the last episode, where you see Jerry taking off her shoes, getting ready to do an all-nighter. And there's there's a scene that I don't think made it into a cut of another episode where you see me just carrying my shoes. And I think that little things like that are incredibly helpful to an actor, because that's a fact. You don't just see them flying down the hall like a younger woman might in really high heels. That's someone who has spent years in heels, and it's kind of like armor. Mm-hmm. And it has a cost to wear that. It's sort of,
and that the clothes are so expensive.
Yes, exactly.
That's the other thing. You get the sense of that these people wear $7,000 worth of clothes, and they're not even thinking about
it. No, not at all.
So that extreme wealth, I think, is telegraphed through the costuming.
Right. I think in season one, I had more of a sort of a work uniform, like more of an off-the-rack Brooks Brothers-ish, mm-hmm. Which was great and seemed rang true to us. But then the costume designer, Michelle Matlin, and myself, you know, we kind of had a conversation as it started shooting, and we saw Jerry's office, which is this huge corner office with incredible views of the city, and we started kind of realizing her income bracket, and then in season two, when you get to see her in these other type of, you know, circumstances, to explore this just sort of stylish wardrobe she might have, and the price tag is reflected in that. Yeah, definitely.
Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, that some of the writers on Succession are playwrights.
Yeah.
People have written plays
true.
As well. Can you tell that in the writing? You've done a lot of different work. I'm wondering what a playwright's writing for TV, what it does for an actor, if it changes, if it's different.
Gee, you're probably onto something that I haven't been able to differentiate. The writing style in Succession is so unique to itself, and I'm never sure who wrote which line, because a writer will write an episode, but then it appears that they all kind of help with every episode along the way. And they also write for the actors sometimes. They'll write in the voice of definitely Kieran or Nick Braun's characters or Matthew's characterization, Tom. They definitely write for that as well. So and I think maybe for me as well. Playwrights and this lot, which I don't know whether they're there are some playwrights. I'm not sure if they all have written plays, but they're very character specific. So it's funny because it has that sort of wonderful, it rings really true like improv to me when I read it. And it's often that we'll change tenses or it won't be grammatically right the way people speak, where you just kind of change midstream. And it's written very specifically that way to sound like improv. And then we do sometimes improv.
Improv. Cool.
And then I feel like, so we all sound like we're in the world of Succession. We all have that, there's a sort of signature sound to it. Mm-hmm. These long sentences, very lots of syllables. And then inside of that, they've somehow made a way to differentiate the voices of these different characters. And that's just real talent. I don't know what to say about that. They amaze me. The writers.
That was my conversation with J. Smith Cameron about her starring role as Jerry in the HBO drama series Succession.